Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you from the Blog Talk Radio studio in the heart of Hudson County, folks. You know it is the wrestling capital of the state of New Jersey. Hey, you know you're listening to the latest edition of Working the Marks right here on Blog Talk Radio. And I am New Jersey's premier journalist, the professor, Fernando Uribe. And he is New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst, the PBR man himself. What's going on, brother?
Sir, how are you? I'm delighted to be back here once again for another edition of Working the Marks with Fernando and Pat. Wait, hold on a sec. I'm reading this off the teleprompter. What does it say? Repeat the line?
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Be careful there.
Wait, wrong one. But hey, I'm going to start off this episode with a joke for you. Okay, check this one out. What's the difference between Boston and yogurt? Do you know?
They're both really bad at times.
Okay, well, yogurt has culture. That's the difference. So Boston does.
Wow, I love it. I love that. Folks, I'll tell you, PBR, never a dull moment here on the show. Always remember to write to the program, ladies and gentlemen, at our inbox, workingthemarks@gmail.com. Again, workingthemarks@gmail.com. Definitely love your feedback and your commentary. Also, check us out on Instagram at working_the_marks. Make sure you check out our own Instagram, of course, at Patty Rican. That's PaddyRican for the great PBR.
That's right.
And my own Instagram.
Slide into my DMs if you're trying to party like Hunter Biden. Slide into my DMs. That's all I'm saying, all right?
There you go. And check out my own Instagram, ladies and gentlemen, at NoFilterUribe. Also on Twitter, check out PBR at his own Twitter account. It is at Patrick SKVM, and of course check out my Twitter as well at NoFilterUribe. Don't forget to like Working the Marks on Facebook for all you Facebook subscribers that don't get shadow banned like others, like yours truly, on there. And make sure that always you check out all the episodes and share them on your social media at blogtalkradio.com/Working the Marks. What's going on, PBR? How was your week, brother?
Good, good. Hey, so when they ban you from Facebook, like when they shadow ban you, do you get like shadow banned to the shadow realm? Is that like what happens? Like I don't know. Do you go to like shadow realm Facebook? Because I've never been banned, so I don't know. But good week, you know, hanging in there, really excited. Going to be having a cultural experience tonight, going to see Dead and Company. Got to go catch those guys before they croak. And people, go see whatever bands you like, whatever artists you like. You know, especially if they're up there in age, man, because they could drop dead any day now. You know what I mean? I had the chance to see James Brown. Unfortunately, he passed before I could see him, and I regret it because it would have been amazing to see the hardest working man in show business. But really excited to be back on the air here with you and chop up all things professional wrestling.
/ sports entertainment, of course. Yes.
Yeah,
ladies and gentlemen, always here on Working the Marks. So, Pat, let's get to some news here. One of the biggest topics this week, obviously reported by various outlets, was that Sasha Banks has now started to book appearances using her real name, Mercedes Renato. As previously noted, Banks was scheduled to make her first non-WWE appearance coming up at the Chicago Comic and Entertainment Expo, which is one of the bigger, sort of conventions in the Midwest at this time of the year. Obviously, we have Comic-Con in New York City coming up in the fall in October. You have Comic-Con out in the West Coast, which I believe is during the springtime. So during the
San Diego Comic-Con.
Correct, yes.
Yeah.
And then, of course, so this one in Chicago, obviously one of the bigger ones that takes place during the summer. She will be available for $90 photo ops and $70 autographs at her table. So the reason the story is so significant, ladies and gentlemen, is that it's being reported that the promoters were quoted a firm specific rate for her signing appearances. Now, wrestling promoters that are attempting to book Banks were told that she was only taking non-wrestling related bookings until January 1st of 2023. So now again, take this with a grain of salt because we've learned to be very skeptical of websites like Fightful Select and others, but there seems to be a consensus going around, Pat, that Banks is asking for $30,000 per appearance. And one promoter said that the price is expected because she's going to be in high demand as she is wanting to leave WWE on her own terms, with a fan base apparently or allegedly willing to still support her. And, you know, she has not been a part of the convention scene before. Now, the reason that numbers, maybe to some it seems crazy egregious, is that this is a fee that is comparable to what other, well, to what legends currently seem to be asking for shows. AEW star Sting asked for apparently $30,000 at recent events. It seems like the only wrestlers that are just as expensive as Mercedes Renato are the Nature Boy Ric Flair, who will be having his last match later this month. So we want to wish the best of luck to the Nature Boy. Hulk Hogan.
Don't die, Rick. Please don't die. And workers, please protect him, man. All right?
Yes, absolutely. Hulk Hogan, Goldberg. Why I wouldn't spend 90 cents for Goldberg, but that's fine. And the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels. Apparently, The Undertaker recently was reported charging $25,000 per appearance. So, again, for those of you at home, after she walked out of the company due to creative differences in May, WWE still has not confirmed that Banks or Naomi have been released. They may not be on the active rosters if you check out the websites. They were stripped of the women's tag titles. They've been suspended indefinitely, and again, they're no longer on the internal roster. Pat, listen, hey, I'm all for, listen, you know me, I'm a fan of capitalism. I'm all for someone going for the hustle and making their money. I get it. Your shelf life is short in this business, as we've learned. But, man, $30,000, it seems like, I don't know, some people thinking that Mercedes is letting this fame get to her head, but you know what? She's got to do her, right?
Absolutely. I mean, and let me tell you something. I know you appreciate hustle. You're a man of three principles: hustle, loyalty, and respect. You know, as far as Mercedes Varnado goes, I mean, she's hot right now. People want to talk to her. People want to see her. People will literally pay money to, like, get her autograph just to chit-chat with her, just to ask her something, just to mention something about WWE. Obviously, we know all these filthy marks when they go to these events, you know, they want to, like, cite their grievances and, you know, oh, you should have been booked this way and you should have been booked that way. And, you know, people go to see Goldberg and maybe they'll bring a box of tissues so that he could sign and they can mail it to Bret Hart. But, I mean, look, at the end of the day, she's doing what she's got to do. The promoter, it's a great investment for him. You know, you pay $30K flat. You're going to be guaranteed a bunch of people to come and get autographs from her. That's number one. So you charge them for tickets. And then whatever she makes with the gimmicks, which the gimmicks are reasonably priced compared to, like, let's say an Undertaker, which, you know, an Undertaker also has a specific set of rules. He won't sign tickets. He won't sign, like, other things that I'm not really aware of right now. But tickets were really one of the main ones, like, for old events. But, I mean, like, Taker's charging, like, $300 for, like, an autograph and, like, $100 for a picture, you know. She's way more reasonable, and granted, Taker's making, let's say, 30, but, like, it's Undertaker, dude. This guy, he spans, like, you know, like, three generations. It's, I'll put it in a simple way. Like, okay, you have Daisy Ridley, let's say, right, Ray from, you know, the new Star Wars trilogy, and then you have Mark Hamill signing autographs, right? Like, who do you think more people are going to go see? Mark Hamill, right? Because he spans over a longer period of time. So Undertaker's kind of Mark Hamill in this situation. And, sure, you know, Sasha Banks is Ray. But, you know, Sasha Banks also made history, too, which is a big deal. And I know that it might not maybe be a big deal to some people out there, but, like, you know, being a woman, you know, to be in the first all-African-American female main event, that's a big deal. So people are going to want to get pictures of her signed. And people are going to probably get a picture of her, you know, and Bianca, and get them signed by both, you know, and frame, you know, that whole collecting thing. So, look, man, she's doing what she's got to do for her. I don't see a problem with it, you know. I mean, she's in demand now, so that rate really makes a lot of sense to me. And yeah, I mean, she's cashing in. So you know, all the best to her. We'll see how everything goes with WWE and like where she's at with all that stuff. I personally feel like, you know, she's a bit of a mark for herself, you know, with the way she's acting. And it's like, just do your job, dude. Just go in there and do your job. Like, you understand what the deal is. You know what the deal is when you get signed. You're there to be successful, and you're there to do what they want you to do. She has done a lot of what they've asked her to do, and she's become incredibly successful. So much so to the point that she's crossed over from wrestling into TV and film, you know? Being in The Mandalorian, that's awesome. And that's another thing, too, that I forgot to add. Not only is she a wrestler, but she was also in The Mandalorian. So you're going to have people coming with the Funko Pops of her, with the action figures of her, and they're going to want to sign that. You know, she's doing well for herself. She's making money. Smart move. Let's see where it goes. You know what I mean?
Well, Pat, let's just sort of dissect that for a second, because I think at the heart of what's going on with Sasha Banks / Mercedes Renato, again, is this perception that fans have. And again, you're someone that worked behind the curtain. You're someone that worked backstage. You understand the dynamics of wrestling, you know, because you were a worker. And what's interesting is that to someone like myself, right, who's a fan, yeah, I'm a mark too, I think, for certain things and people, whatever. But Pat, I think at the end of the day, it sort of boils down to, I think, the optic that this presents, and I think the perspective that wrestling fans have, because let's be honest, bro, when you experience a certain amount of success and you're in the upper echelon of someone who is contributing to their profession and is making money and is generating headlines, and again, you're a headliner, it seems like Sasha isn't the first person to be guilty of this, where maybe it's getting to your head, maybe a level of self-importance now is evident. And I think, listen, she's not the first person to be this way, to throw a hissy fit, to not like the creative direction of their character. She's certainly not going to be the last. But it seems like she's not really giving or providing a good example, at least I would say, to other young wrestlers, where at the end of the day, like WWE, like professional wrestling, I mean, it just keeps churning along. You know, okay, it's sort of, you can choose, you know, you plug a hole. You know, if something's leaking in a pipe, like a plumber, you plug the hole, you seal it, and you continue. And it just seems like WWE hasn't missed a beat without Naomi and Sasha Banks. I mean, I'm not the biggest Naomi fan, but I understand her purpose. But it just seems like this should be a wake-up call to Sasha. Like, okay, the women's division is not regressing. The women's division continues to excel in WWE without her. So it's like, okay, I get it. Make your money now at these conventions. But Vince, I don't think, is losing sleep about losing Sasha Banks. She's going to get Charlotte Flair back soon after. Well, okay, they've already celebrated their honeymoon. I'm sure she's taking some time off to you know, get healed and whatever. It's not like Vince doesn't have a plethora of female stars he can push. So I think it's also, I think this, we talked about it before, it sets a really bad example to wrestlers and workers that, like, well, you know, if you throw a hissy fit, you're going to get your way. That's not always the case, and I think she amplifies this.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, like, I know what I know from my experience, right? But I also got into wrestling and was trained by people who were a lot more, you know, old school, let's say, than I was, right? However, I never reached the level of fame that she did, so I don't know what that's like, and I don't know how that changes people. I can't even begin to imagine. You know what I'm saying? But at the end of the day, like, you got to do your job, you know, and you got to trust in the people that have taken you this far, you know. I hate to say it, but I kind of feel like the women's tag titles were, like, kind of doomed to begin with, because it's like, what are you really going to do? Like, how are you going to feature that prominently? I know a lot of people give Vince a lot of grief about, like, tag team wrestling. Right. You know, Vince doesn't feature tag team wrestling. That's one of the chief complaints of a lot of marks you see and stuff like that.
But, well, I mean, for years, Vince, right? I mean, for years.
Yeah.
I mean, that's always been now, again, whether or not that's accurate, which I think it's not accurate, but a lot
I don't
of
think it's accurate
now.
Either. I think a lot of what marks say is not very accurate. And I think a lot of them are speaking from what they like and not what actually works and, like, what's actually making business sense. But you know, I think that, I mean, like, for every person that wants to say, hey, like, Vince doesn't care about tag team wrestling, take a look at those Uso Street Profit matches. Take a look at those Usos Arcade Bro matches in the last couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
those matches have been main events. Last night, there was what? It was a match between tag teams in a main event. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so.
But Pat, I'll let you finish up. But let's be fair, too. Like, when Stephanie McMahon announced the women's tag team titles were being resuscitated and they were going to be prominently featured, let's be fair, man. Again, I kind of grade for a living. And I think for the totality of the time the titles have been in existence, yeah, they were featured at WrestleMania, the one here at MetLife Stadium in 2019. Even during the pandemic in 20, well, I mean, listen, it was a match that people got into. I mean, that Fatal 4-Way, people got into. Now, again, I'm not saying it's, listen, whatever the result was, I liked it. I know not everybody else did, but, like, they were featured on pay-per-views,
mm-hmm.
okay? And they were, even during the pandemic, they were featured at WrestleMania in 2020. They were featured in 2021. But, like, the bigger question, I think, to you, man, again, having been a worker, like,
mm-hmm.
does Sasha really have a grievance? Like, it wasn't being defended on TV lately. I think the last two pay-per-views before her and Sasha had their tantrum, they were not featured on the PLEs. They weren't really being featured on TV. So it's like, does she have a real grievance that the titles are being done a disservice because they're not being put on television? Like, a lot of fans might just say, well, maybe she's got a point. Like, they're not being prominently featured. And, hey, maybe she's taking exception with that because she's the champion. And as a woman, again, listen, be it far from me, because you know me, I don't like to talk about identity politics. That's what I do on Mondays on Real Talk on Jersey First TV. But as a woman, you know, backstage, like, does she have a real grievance that maybe those titles are kind of getting the shaft overall?
I mean, maybe if that's how she feels about it, you know what I'm saying? But she's in a different bracket. I could understand if she's somebody who just came up from NXT and that's her first championship. But, I mean, this chick is, like, one of the most prominent stars in the women's division for some years now. You know what I mean? I mean, dude, you take a look at you know, some of the best matches that they've had since 2015. She's in a lot of them. So I guess I can kind of understand where she's coming from. But, like, I don't know. I maybe it's because of how I was, you know, brought into the business, what I was taught. Like, she's being a mark, dude. She's making a ton of money, guaranteed. Don't be a mark for yourself. Let them use you when they use you. And I don't even think – I think the gripe was, you know, they're putting the tag titles in the backseat so that they could have done a program, I think, with Bianca and Naomi and then Ronda and Sasha, right? So it's like, okay, people – they weren't going to feature the tag team titles for, like, a month or two. That's fine. But, like, you were still going to be in big matches. You were still going to be in main events. And, again, Sasha's at the point where, like, wins and losses don't really matter for her because she's over. She's over. She's always going to get a pop. The fans are always going to like her. So, like, she's not in that position where, let's say, somebody from NXT would come up. But, hey, man, you know, if that's how she feels, that's how she feels. I don't think there's anything anybody's going to be able to tell her otherwise. But, I mean, this has happened before with her. And this isn't an isolated incident. And from what I understand, as reported by Billy Boddy, you know, Naomi's at least in remediation with them, and they're kind of trying to figure something out, whereas, like, Sasha just doesn't want to talk. So we'll see what happens. But for me personally, just take the money, man. You know, like, your shelf life is really, really short as a wrestler. Just take the money. Do what they're asking you to do. You're going to make money in merch. You're going to end up in big spots anyway because you're super talented. Take the money as long as you can and so your body can hold on. And then, you know, wait till Disney Plus comes looking for you for a spinoff, and you're good, you know?
Oh, great points there. Pat, sticking in WWE with some news, last night on SmackDown after, which was kind of expected. I was like, well, the need for a special referee in the upcoming tag team title match at SummerSlam is because, if you remember, at Money in the Bank, there was controversy, right, that whether it was gimmick or not, that the referee missed Montez's Ford shoulder being up during the three count. Last night, Charles Robinson missed the shoulder when Angelo Dawkins pinned Jimmy Uso, I believe. So clearly that started planting the seeds for, well, you know, we need a referee, a special referee that can control this match and can be a semblance of law and order for the upcoming title match in at SummerSlam. And hey, you know, once we remember that SummerSlam is in Nashville, what better way than to announce that WWE Hall of Famer Slapnuts, the former chosen one, J-E-F-F-J-A-R-R-E-T-T, Double J Jeff Jarrett, will be the special referee for the tag team title match, the undisputed tag team title match between the Street Profits and the Usos. Some nostalgia in their path for SummerSlam. Nashville, it's his hometown, still lives there. He's the executive vice president of live events now, which is kind of interesting. Jeff Jarrett, big news last night. That kind of, you know, very mixed reactions on Twitter last night about Jeff Jarrett being announced as a special referee.
Well, whoever doesn't like it can kiss my ass. Jeff Jarrett's awesome. I'm happy that he's involved in any kind of way. I've been a big Jeff Jarrett fan for a long time. In my opinion, one of the most overlooked, underutilized workers, I would say, of all time. I mean, Jeff Jarrett could do a lot, and he was a guy that could just do very, very little and just get a really good crowd reaction because he knew how to get that heat, and he knew how to work the crowd and keep people interested. He's had so many classics throughout the years, whether it's in WWF, you know, WCW, Impact, TNA, you know, Jeff Jarrett's always a guy that will put in a shift and will always do something cool. And how could you not love a guy who hit Beetlejuice over the head with a guitar? You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I mean, listen, I would love for Slapnuts. Listen, I wish he was refereeing at SummerSlam with a Slapnuts t-shirt, but I know Vince won't allow that. But maybe he will. Maybe he will, because it seems like WWE is apparently, and we'll talk about that, that's our big topic for the show, in terms of what type of t-shirts and what can be said on t-shirts, that is something that maybe is going to become an eye raiser for sure. Pat, some other news here this week. Kind of disappointed to read this for our fans, for, you know, fans of the New Day, and looking to hope that Big E Langston will be making a recovery, hopefully. But that was reported by Matthew Wilkinson this week out of Wrestling Inc. that thankfully, while Big E was able to avoid surgery, apparently he's been told that after taking a suplex from Rich Holland later earlier this spring, it seems that according to what ESPN told, well, according to what was revealed to ESPN by doctors that that collaborated on this story, it seems that he's recovering as well as possible. But the idea maybe that, you know, because he fractured his C1 and C6 vertebrae during the bump, you know, obviously hasn't been seen on live television yet, but it doesn't seem to be something that, well, again, I'm not a medical doctor. I'm more academic doctor, but the point is that here is, it just seems that there's no time frame about when he could return if ever. Yeah, he's not going to experience paralysis. It seems he's going to make a full recovery, like from a human being perspective, obviously, with his spinal cord. It just, I don't know, there's mixed reports about whether or not he could ever return to pro wrestling / sports entertainment. And I think that has to be a huge buzzkill for wrestling fans that were crossing their fingers for Big E. What did you read? Anything different than what we're reporting here today?
No, more or less it's kind of spot on and the same. I think we're both pretty good with reading comprehension, so... but you know, it's not like it's Nirvana lyrics. We're not going to get two different things there. But I gotta say, it's completely unfortunate. Like, it's so messed up, man. How sports and entertainment and wrestling can kind of be a little cruel, a little bitter. I mean, how many, you know, great careers did we see cut short? For me personally, as a 49er fan, you know, Patrick Willis, that was one career that I saw got cut short. And it was just really, really sad because of injuries. But just, you know, really sad to see for Big E. I would have liked to have seen him maybe stick around in the main event a little bit longer. I thought as a champion, as a worker, he was good. Not as a champion, but as a worker while he was champion, he was good. As a champion, he was a little flat, not going to lie. But you never want to see anybody get hurt. You never want to see anybody end up in this situation. And just kind of sad to see. And I think for all you spiritual folks out there, or religious folks, you know, if you want to say a prayer for him and kind of hope for the best for him. You know, I think this would be the time, but I hope someday we could get to see Biggie back in the ring somehow, some way.
I hope so too. Apparently, from what I'm reading here, it seems like one of the C1 vertebrae, if it's not regrowing bone, that's what's necessary to demonstrate to doctors whether or not the spinal cord is redeveloping strength. So if that's not happening, obviously it makes anything athletic impossible to engage
right.
in. But again, we'll see. There are just extreme marvels in medicine, progress every day. There are breakthroughs. We'll see. I'm praying for Biggie for sure.
Hey, how many times has Kevin Nash torn his quad and he's still walking? You know what I'm saying? Like, come on.
True. No, I feel you, yeah. No, I feel you. Listen, medical breakthroughs and just advances in medicine, we're seeing that every day. So I'll keep praying for Biggie, and I know our fans are too. Interesting, though, kind of went under the radar this week, especially with everything that's going on with Vince McMahon, though, Pat, especially with apparently new allegations that he's paid $12 million out of his own money for up to four women. I know Billy Body, Disco Inferno, and Conan talked a little bit about it this week. I really want to get your thoughts on that in a moment about who they were speculating about, let's say who some of the women were, right, based on the timestamp of what happened. But apparently a lawsuit that involved Vince McMahon this week was dismissed. Apparently Vince McMahon and former XFL commissioner Oliver Luck, for everyone at home who maybe isn't familiar with that name, that is the father of retired NFL superstar and former Indianapolis Colt quarterback Andrew Luck, motioned to settle the multi-million dollar lawsuit between the two parties last month. And apparently various outlets, which include PW Insider and Wrestling Inc., are reporting that a judge officially dismissed the lawsuit, noting that both sides came to a confidential settlement. Well, what else is new with Vince McMahon? Had come to a confidential settlement, and neither side will have to pay the legal fees of the other. So apparently, for everyone at home, the chronology is, ladies and gentlemen, Oliver Luck sued Vince McMahon and the XFL for wrongful termination and was asking for $24 million in unpaid financial compensation. This led to Vince McMahon filing a countersuit saying that the XFL terminated Luck for, quote, cause, saying Luck violated the league's policy against hiring players with off-field controversies. Wow. Folks, I'll tell you, for Vince McMahon, I'll tell you. The pot calling the kettle black, I'll tell you. With off-the-field controversies after signing former NFL wide receiver Antonio Callaway, who was cited for marijuana possession in 2018. Apparently, with the lawsuit no longer an issue for Vince McMahon, he can now focus on the current board of directors investigation into a series of hush money payments that the WWE chairman and CEO made to former employees. Again, as reported last week, we talked about it at length, paying out over $12 million, Pat, in the last 16 years, thus Vince stepping down as CEO, with his daughter Stephanie taking as the interim CEO. Despite the investigation, Vince McMahon still maintains control over the company's creative direction. Pat, you know, obviously this went under the radar. Clearly one less headache for Vince McMahon, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think when you get to that point where you have, to quote my late great Uncle David, stupid money, people are always going to come and want to take a little piece of the pie. And you know, I think that's kind of the situation there. It's kind of funny when you look at it. It's like Vince has a problem with a wide receiver smoking weed, but, like, he's pushing Matt Riddle to the moon. How does that work out? You know, it's one less thing for him to worry about. I think, you know, the board of directors thing is that's a non-issue. I know a lot of marks are calling for his head. A lot of Vince haters are calling for his head. I genuinely get the feeling. And, you know, you look at it from, like, the Sean Ross Sapps and the Meltzers and the Alvarezes and, you know, like, all these other Jay Brones that are online, these fake news Jay Brones. They're all, like, just calling for Vince, you know, and they're trying to get, like, this Twitter movement behind it. But it's like, no, man, like, I'm sorry. You're just not. Like, unless Vince murders somebody, like, it's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen because I think this guy's too smart. He's cleaned up every trail. And more importantly, like, what he did isn't a crime, you know. The guy had a fucking affair, okay. And, you know, we want to take a look at the timeline. So a lot of people speculate it's Christy Hemme, right?
Is that what everybody's been saying? Everybody kind of generally feels it's Christy Hemme?
Well, just to be clear, I mean, no one has said for sure, but if you look at the time frame, because it's 2005, and then you look at when it was settled, and we know that Christy Hemme has always been very hush-hush about her departure from WWE, and then when she went to work for Impact Wrestling for so many years, again, it was something that she really, really glossed over. She didn't really talk about. Again, it kind of leads you to believe, well, maybe that's the NDA. Who knows? But I know Billy Body, Disco, and Conan. Again, now, for the record, folks, they didn't say it was her. No one is saying emphatically it is her. But again, if you look at the timeline and you look at everything else, you know, you can kind of, cognitively speaking, you can kind of put two and two together. That's the speculation, I would say.
You know who I think? You know who I think? And this one's a dark horse. I don't think anybody said this one yet. Victoria, man. Hmm. For some reason,
okay.
I don't know why, but I feel like Victoria. Because, I mean, has she really come out and talked a lot about her time in WWE? You know, has she said anything negatively? Has she? I mean, look, like, this is all consensual here. You know what I mean? Like, these people are just doing what they're doing. Like, there's nothing illegal. There's nothing, like, wrong. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they're both consenting adults.
Well, Pat,
getting
too.
Involved
I mean, also,
in something. You know?
Pat, I'm sorry. I'll let you finish, though. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah,
it also leads to the speculation that, you know, for whatever reason, if someone deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, I mean, you know, Victoria was a multi-time women's champion. She was one of those women that crossed over from fitness competition, right? Right after Trish kind of broke on the scene in 2000, like 99, 2000, like Victoria was right. Remember, Victoria was one of the hoes. Excuse the language, folks. I mean, whatever. It's, you know, that's just the way it was described. But she was one of, the, you know, the Godfather's original hoes. And again, Vince had just signed her from fitness competitions that she was doing along with Trish. So, again, you know, she crossed over, became a multi-time women's champion, you know, a real badass in the women's division at a time that it was going away from being divas to women, you know, to you know, and kind of giving women's wrestling a resurgence a little bit during the early to mid-2000s.
Yeah, agreed. I hope someday in the future we can see Victoria go from the Ho train to the Hall of Fame. You know, I think that would be kind of cool because, you know, she deserves it. You know, and yeah, like, I don't think people should get offended about that Ho train. Like, he was a pimp. That was his gimmick. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, what, pimps don't have hoes? I mean, like, geez, people, you know, you should have seen, like, Superfly or something.
You know. But yeah, if you want to be proper, I mean, you can call them independent contractors. I mean,
yeah, you know, it's the oldest profession in the world. I mean, come on, you know, I mean, come on, folks, your grandma's got some secrets. All right. So let's not get all uppity about it. But yeah, she's one that I just feel like could have been it. I mean, everybody's going to go with Christy Hemme. Look, at the end of the day, it is what it is. I mean, and yeah, one last thing for Vince to worry about, you know, I didn't know it was Andrew Luck's dad that was involved at the XFL. You actually just dropped that little bit of knowledge on me right now. Does he look like Andrew Luck? Like, does he have like that big skull with the Spartan hair, like, you know, looking like he came out of like a shitty version of Gladiator?
I mean, he kind of looks more like his mother, which is like, yikes, but there's some resemblance to his dad for sure.
Wow. Wow. So I'm trying to imagine a woman that looks like Andrew Luck now. That's kind of scary. But yeah, you know, one last problem for Vince. So, you know, we'll see when all this nonsense kind of blows over.
Oh, absolutely. In other wrestling news this week, kind of conducive to what we saw this past weekend, obviously A&E is restarting a new series of WWE documentaries when it comes to legends. Last Sunday, from 8 p.m. Eastern time to 10 p.m. Eastern time, we saw The Undertaker. And again, for anyone who didn't watch it, I mean, if you watched The Last Ride and you watched last year's documentaries about what the WWE was doing, and they, you know, they showed a lot of the same footage from last year. It kind of went through the same chronology of, you know, Mark Calloway growing up in Texas, being, you know, rather tall. So obviously it prompted him to go play basketball, to, you know, and he got that epiphany to not finish college, went out to Mad Dog Buzz Sawyer's so-called wrestling school, put money in to try to learn wrestling. He didn't. And, you know, it kind of detailed Mark Calloway's long, winding road to superstardom, you know, starting in Dallas, Texas, in world-class championship wrestling. Obviously, people know the story. Fritz Von Erich saw Mark Calloway standing outside and said, wow, let's book that kid on Friday at the Sportatorium in Dallas because he looks like, you know, David Von Erich, the recently deceased member of the Von Erich family, one of the older brothers. And then he went overseas, and obviously we all know the rest is history. But what was interesting, though, Pat, is after that, at 10 p.m. Eastern time, was the debut of another series that A&E is starting this summer, and that's WWE Rivals. And the first one, and I think it was a great choice, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, it documented their upbringing in the business, their matches when they were obviously in the Rockers and the Hart Foundation, and then when they both went into singles wrestling in 1992, and their historic first ladder match, actually. I know people talk about Shawn Michaels later on at WrestleMania, but the very first ladder match, really, that fans got exposed to was Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. I believe in late 92, that's a classic, and they talked about the where it went from a gimmick to, like, at times a real real-world dislike, and even at times hatred. You know, the story about, you know, people talked about it this week, Conan, Jim Cornette, Eric Bischoff, and others talked about the infamous fight, I believe, in Hartford, or that Bret Hart and Shawn had in the locker room. Bret ripped out a piece of his hair. Shawn wanted to sue the WWE or walk out because of unsafe work environment. You know, it seems like they took a gimmick and turned it into a real-world Jerry Springer, Maury Povich, Richard Bey, Morton Downey Jr. type drama, and they articulated that entire timeline. And at the end, it was really nice, though, Pat, because you saw a moment that they shared in Dallas this year in April in a hotel where Shawn ran into Bret, and they were so cordial to each other, hugs, talking about, oh, how's it like being a grandfather to Bret? What's it like with his kids, as it refers to Shawn? It seemed like, you know, that was a really nice ending to what looked like years and years of animosity because of what happened. The reason I bring this up, though, Pat, is apparently this week Bret Hart did an interview with Reddit. And for anyone that watched, that reads Reddit.com, they do have a section called Reddit, but with a W. It's, I guess, more pro-wrestling-centric. And apparently he did an interview this week where Bret Hart credits Dave Meltzer for saving him from the way the WWF was going to construe the Montreal Screwjob, and or at least the way Vince wanted to paint Bret, or at least the way that the WWF wanted to present the PR presentation of what happened in Montreal. It seems like Bret went out of his way to thank Dave Meltzer for that. I'll be honest with you, I don't think that's a good idea, because we've all learned how, let's be honest, how lacking credibility Dave Meltzer is now and for some time now. So I get it. Maybe he wants to look back in nostalgia and say, hey, I'm glad Meltzer didn't let Vince bury me in the way that they presented what happened in Montreal. But I don't think it was a good forum for Bret to go on this week, bro.
Well, I mean, look, there's definitely a lot to unpack there. It's no surprise that I've said before that I think the screw job was a work. And for Dave Meltzer to be involved in a work, interesting there, huh? You know, it's not like we haven't had a recent example of him being involved in a attempted elaborate work with MJF, which is now everybody just knows it's a work. So, you know, we're all just kind of waiting for it to, like, kind of unfold. But, you know, I mean, look, Bret right now is really, really, really revered by the AEW crowd, by the Mark crowd, you know, whether it's FTR, you know, doing their best Bret Hart impersonation and, you know, running all his spots, CM Punk botching all of his spots, you know, all those fans kind of clamoring for Bret. Tony Khan, you know, once again speaking about his admiration for a wrestler, but this time Bret. You know, Bret's going where the money's at. And a lot of those marks in AEW, those filthy, disgusting, you know, onion-smelling marks, you know, they worship Dave Meltzer, you know. Dave Meltzer could take a shit and say it's gold and the marks will believe it. So for Bret to give some props to Meltzer is a smart move on Bret's part because, hey, you know what, he's going to make the gimmick money with Vince with T-shirts and all that stuff. But, you know, he's got to keep himself alive with another audience. And I think him putting over Meltzer, you know, is a smart move, especially now, given the love that all the AEW marks have for him.
Pat, I just think it's a bad look because, you know, there's more than enough information out there. Books, we've seen plenty of documentaries, we've seen YouTube documentaries.
Let's be real.
Agreed. But between YouTube documentarians, between presentations on A&E, between shoot interviews, books that have been written about this, I just don't know that, listen, either you believe it or you don't. Like in your case, you're saying you don't believe it, you don't think it's legitimate. And even, you know, fans after Sunday obviously went to Twitter, went to Instagram, and went to, you know, the idea that, oh, my God, like, what did that happen today? Well, folks, first of all, again, I want the professor doesn't want to hold class because it's summer and I don't teach summer school. But it just seems like it's a very different time, folks, where when that happened in 1997, Vince legitimately had a serious threat financially and competitively speaking to his company. Say what you want about WCW and Eric Bischoff and how poorly run it was at the end. At that time in 1997, up until early 98, Vince had a legitimate concern about his company. That's not the case today. So if a wrestler wants to attempt to do what Brett did in 97, and again, some people are going to say he was standing up for himself. He didn't like the creative. He felt Vince wasn't trustworthy. However you want to spin it, Pat, that wouldn't happen today because Vince doesn't feel the pressure that he did in 97. So if someone wants to walk out because they don't like what's going on, case in point, let's go back to the beginning of this program, right?
Yeah.
Sasha Banks / Mercedes Renato. Guess what? She wants to walk out and leave. Well, she can do that. And Vince isn't going to blink an eye. Vince didn't have that luxury in 1997. Vince didn't have the luxury of saying, oh, yeah, Brett, you want to leave? Psh, whatever. Peace out. That's not the case, folks. And I think people have to sort of, I get it, take your fandom for a second and remove it, right? Stop wearing your bias on your sleeves and just say, it's apples and oranges. It's not the same thing. It's a very different time in pro wrestling history. What Vince was faced with was a very different deck of cards than a deck of cards that he has today. As a matter of fact, he owns the cards today. He owns the entire deck. That wasn't the case in 1997. So I think the idea is that I get it. You know, whether it was Annie on Sunday, and listen, if you're a Shawn Michaels fan, if you're a Bret Hart fan, you're going to take sides. You're going to say, well, who was right, who was wrong? You know, and people, that's the eternal debate forever. You can talk to any Shawn Michaels fan, any Bret Hart fan, and they're going to have an opinion about Montreal. They're going to have an opinion about the events leading up to Montreal, and there's no way to be wishy-washy. You're on one side or the other. It's almost like, well, historic sports franchises, Pat, you either love the Yankees or hate the Yankees. You either hate Real Madrid or love them. You either hate the Cowboys or love them. You either hate the Lakers, Celtics, whatever. There's no middle ground here. When it comes to Montreal, it's a topic that is tribal. People take sides, and people are still going to take sides on this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, I think that Vince made a mistake and was like, dude, I can't afford you to pay you that. I'm bleeding money. You know, WCW's got me bent over a barrel, but I feel really bad that I did this with you, and I want to figure something out so that we can do something. And I think, honestly, Brett and Shawn worked the boys. I really do. I think they worked the boys. They even worked their own friends to believing that they legitimately hated each other. You know what I mean? Because they wanted this to be real. And this was before, you know, the internet was really big, you know, when the dirt sheets were really the only thing you'd probably get, you know, and it was literally like a sheet of paper. And, you know, Meltzer back then was like, he was an asset to the boys. You know, he would help guys get bookings in different territories when they were on the indies, you know, or work different dates for, like, you know, big cash stuff. Like, you know, Brett sometimes would do shows in Canada, but not, you know, just be there for autograph signings, not work them, you know. So Meltzer was kind of instrumental in a lot of that stuff. But I just think that between Shawn, Triple H, Vince, and Brett, those four said, hey, we need to come up with something that is going to put us in a good position when Brett leaves, because I want Brett to go take that money because I don't want him to miss out. He's got a family. And I think we're going to come up with something that could benefit us
make Shawn the biggest heel in wrestling, bigger than Hogan, and send Brett to WCW as the biggest babyface in the business. And I think that's what they did. I think they genuinely constructed something to work to that effect because they all knew that it was going to be Steve. And if Brett would have kept the title and lost it to Steve, yeah, it would have been great, absolutely. But I don't think it would have had the same effect as Shawn dropping the title to Steve. And unfortunately, Shawn wasn't able physically to have the best match that he could, but it was just the person that was, you know, dropping it there. Because, you know, Shawn is more of a cocky heel, you know, arrogant, good-looking guy, whatever. And here's Steve, this rough, rugged dude. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, that's a better matchup for the fans. But I think that they constructed this whole thing, man. I think they put this whole thing together. I think they used it, the documentary crew to their advantage to kind of add to the realism. And I think they worked a lot of the people that were around them into believing this. I mean, look, we're still talking about it now. They just did a documentary on A&E. A whole new generation of kids that weren't even alive back then are watching this shit going, gee, what the fuck is this? And then they go, bam, on the wonderful Peacock, which also features Barclays Premier League, folks. Don't forget that. And, you know, they go on there and they watch all the stuff about Shawn and Brett. They watch all the 97 Raws. They watch all, you know, the pay-per-views from back then, everything leading up to them. I mean, at the end of the day, everybody's making money here. It works out for the best. But, I mean, look, as far as sides go, obviously it's no surprise. I think Shawn's a GOAT. I think Brett is one of the greatest to ever do it. I love Brett. I love what Brett brought to wrestling. I love Brett's seriousness, really. And I know a lot of people criticize him for it, and I do too. But I love the seriousness that he brought to wrestling. You know, like, he really made you believe that he really cared. You know what I mean? And it was really important. But I got to go with the side of the promoter. You know what I mean? And the promoter wanted him to do something. He didn't want to do it. I think that, you know, if this was real, you know, in my opinion, I think that Brett should have just done the right thing and dropped the title when the promoter asked him to drop the title. That's it. Like, be grateful. Understand, too, that, yes, you helped this guy make money, but you didn't make Hogan money for him. And not only that, but, like, you know, Vince put you in this position. Vince is the one who helped you get out of Calgary and put you in this spot. You know what I mean? And I think that's the important thing. But, you know, I got to side with with Vince on that one, man. I mean, he wanted him to drop the belt. He didn't want to drop the belt. Took the belt off of him. He thought he would do it because he grew up in the business, you know, the time-honored tradition, you know, and unfortunately, it just didn't go down that way. But look, man, if it is a work, if it is, right, it's the greatest work ever. It really is. It's the greatest work ever because we're still talking about it and everybody's still getting paid. So if you're gonna pitch some kind of a work, you know, you got to make it lucrative, and you got to make it enduring. And I think they've accomplished that with this.
Oh, they certainly have. You mentioned there's people are still talking about it, and it's something that's gonna continue being talked about for years to come, even generations.
Fernando, real quick, but like, look at this, like this thing we're still talking about years later, right? We're still talking about it, and now I'm getting a bunch of heat now with all the Bret Hart Yodonis, you know? So, hey, any of you Bret Hart fans out there want to write something to the podcast, write something, okay? Put your tissue boxes down, and whether you're crying about Goldberg or the screw job, just type something in, shoot us a message. We'd love to chat.
Yeah, speaking of Goldberg, like you just referenced, yeah, I have no interest in watching that tomorrow night on A&E. I have zero interest. I'll be watching something else.
I totally do.
I'm not interested in watching that, so whatsoever. I'm not interested in that. I mean, again, I know some fans will. I think that some fans may not. You know, some fans may not be.
You
all
don't. You don't have the Goldberg tattoo because I could have sworn the one day I saw you in a Real Madrid jersey. You know that they're white jerseys, beautiful white jerseys. So like they're a little sheer sometimes. But I could have sworn that I saw a Goldberg tattoo on your shoulder.
Yeah, no. You must have me confused with Bron Breakker, who has openly said he regrets getting that tattoo when he did. But I mean, who knows? That's really for different reasons. But your reference Goldberg, that should be interesting tomorrow because I don't think it's going to change the mind. Either you like Goldberg, or you didn't. I don't think it's going to change the minds of anybody that watched wrestling during the late '90s or 2000s and again, still Goldberg is an attraction. I get that. It's not for me. But again, that's not what Vince does when it comes to business. So it'll be interesting. Speaking of generations, though, Pat, this past week in Orlando, we saw arguably the first – well, not arguably, she is. She's the first fourth-generation wrestler in the history of WWE. And Dwayne Johnson's daughter, Simone, made her debut. Her in-ring name is Ava Raine. That's R-A-I-N-E. And she appeared at a house show in Citrus Springs, Florida. For anyone that's familiar, that's kind of in the Panhandle area. Some good God-fearing folks down there in Florida, as they say. The next house show, we'll be in Orlando. Again, according to The Rock, as he spoke with Entertainment Tonight this week, she's very independent. She's trying to make her way in the business to blaze her own path, obviously. Listen, I haven't seen any highlights yet. Apparently, the reception about her is great. It certainly helps when her father is Dwayne Johnson. So I'm sure, like anything else, man, in any profession, whether it's politics, sports, business, you name it, I'm sure that I'm sure Simone will have every ample opportunity to succeed as much as possible. I'm sure the ceiling for her is very high. Interesting, very a bit of a resemblance. I think she looks more like her mother than her father, but very athletic. You can tell, very toned, has the height, certainly has the look, I think, that Vince is looking for when it comes to female wrestlers. And, again, we'll see what happens, but it seems like it's very promising after her debut this week.
Well, when we were talking earlier, when I was taking a shit, I was telling you that I really think that chicks, especially the ones that are in WWE, need to have different looks. You know what I'm saying? They all can't look like brass dolls. And that's what I feel like has been a kind of, like, common thing, like, kind of semi-recently, where you see these chicks that look like brass dolls. And it's like, okay, you know, I get that that's attractive. Like, there's people that like it, right? That's fine. But, like, you want to have different-looking characters. You want to have different-looking women. I mean, some people might not find her attractive. Some people might find her attractive. That's fine. But she is different-looking. More importantly, she comes from a lineage of very successful talent in this industry. And I'm not just going to say that she's going to be good yet or not. I haven't seen anything of her. But, you know, you got to believe that she's going to bring the character somehow. You got to believe that she's going to do that. I just hope that she doesn't fall into, like, a trap of just, like, being a bad, you know, facsimile of her father or something like that. You know, like some shitty version. I hope that she tries to be creative. I really like the fact that she has a different name instead of using Simone Johnson or, you know, Simone Maivia. You know, or the Simone, you know, or Pebble. I'm glad that she's not doing that. And it's kind of cool that she's trying to be her own person. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with her. But, you know, as soon as she debuts, the whole internet's going to be talking. And I think that that's what they're going for with her. So as long as she can get that attention, that notoriety, get the basics down, and talk, I mean, like a quarter of as good as her dad did, she'll be fine. So let's see what goes on with Simone.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see exactly how they could definitely use her and what character she'll bring to the screen when she's featured at some point, maybe regularly on NXT television. Pat, our main event this week and a topic that is generating a lot of buzz on the internet, dirt sheets, social media, as reported by Sports Illustrated and other new sites, ESPN this week, as well as the regular dirt sheets. It seems that the change could be coming to Raw's presentation. Apparently, Andrew Zarian of the Mat Men podcast, which is not a bad podcast. I've heard it a few times. And it's not like a very mark-centric podcast, per se, from what I can understand. It seems that World Wrestling Entertainment is considering a change that would see Raw become a TV-14 rated program on the USA Network. So if that does happen, it would be the first time since 2008 that WWE's flagship television show has not been rated TV PG. Now, apparently, it's being reported that the change will go into effect this Monday, July 18th. Raw was previously rated TV 14 from 1997 at the height of the Attitude Era to 2008, really kind of towards the end of the Ruthless Aggression Era, per se. And it seems that, obviously, with the change to TV 14, it'll make Monday Night Raw edgier and perhaps having more mature programming. I'll go with this. I think this is a catastrophe in the making for AEW. AEW already is lagging in the ratings up against WWE. We're seeing the numbers. If Raw, well, it seems like it will, whether it happens officially this Monday or not, we'll find out, right, when the rating comes out on the screen. We'll see upper right-hand corner with the box. I got to tell you, man, you know, fans, I think, went crazy this week on the internet because the first thing they thought of, oh, you know, we're going back to the Attitude Era. I'm sorry, folks. That's not going to happen. And as a guy who, believe me, doesn't like to poo-poo things, and as a guy who loved the Attitude Era for what it was, there's a lot of stuff during the Attitude Era that wouldn't fly today. And, it's, again, for me, I liked it. I mind edgy frat boy humor. That's me, but it's not for everybody. I think fans are having a very big misconception, Pat, about what TV 14 is going to be. It's not going to be, you know, guys manhandling women or abusing women. No one's going to wear blackface. No one's going to, you know, I don't think it's going to be toilet humor per se. Yeah, it might be edgier. You know, as far as what adult programming is, I don't know. That's a very subjective thing. But I think this could be just a disaster for AEW because as if their job isn't hard enough already, it's going to be hard for them because Raw is just going to continue to romp in the ring. It does already. It does a 1.7, 1.8 anyway. SmackDown does a over 2 consistently every week. Clearly, we're not going to see SmackDown go to TV 14. The executives at Fox, you know, obviously would have something to say about that. But NBC Universal, which runs the USA Network, clearly maybe they see this as a necessary evil, bro.
I mean, look, I think this is a card that Vince had in his back pocket for a long time. It's kind of like the whole WWF thing, you know. He could have gone back, but he's like, nah, I'm not going to do that. I'm going a different direction. That's the path. I think Vince did as much as he could during the PG era, squeezed every single last drop out of it. And I think that he wants to kind of shake things up. I think he wants to, I think more importantly, I think he wants the challenge of trying to understand what is TV 14 and what's going to be TV 14 in 2022. And that to me is the most, you know, compelling part of it all. Like that's where I'm really like, okay, now I'm really interested. Now I'm really invested. And let me tell you something. There's a lot of WWE haters in recent years for a variety of reasons, you know, a lot of which we detail on the show. Most of it is just because they're crybaby marks and they just want to complain about something. Or, you know, maybe they got tired about complaining about something else. But this is a way to get people to tune back in. So I'm really, really curious to see what the rating is going to be, because I think it's been confirmed, you know, pretty much across the board that it's going to be this Monday, the 18th. So this Monday, I think, is going to get a pretty solid rating spike. And look, even if nothing really changes or whatever the case is, or maybe they might say shit once in a while, which they've kind of been doing anyway, it's still going to be very interesting. And I just think it's a really smart move from Vince once again to just get people to tune back in and have hope. You know, it almost seems like every time the fans have completely lost hope or the marks have completely lost hope, you know, Vince somehow lures everybody back in, you know, whether sure to complain or whether to enjoy, you know, he always lures everybody back in. So I think the most interesting thing for me is what is TV 14 for WWE in 2022.
what is it going to be like? Mm-hmm. What is the content going to be like? And look, let's be real. The roster, fantastic. So the possibilities are there. But I'm just curious to see where it goes. And I really hope that it doesn't teeter a lot on cheap heat. I hope it doesn't, you know what I mean? Which AEW is guilty of, but I do have faith that because WWE is more structured, you know, it'll be a little bit better and a little less cheap.
But that's not Vince. Yeah, but that's not Vince. Vince has avoided cheap heat for as long as we can remember. And Vince is, like you said, it's infinitely more structured than anything Tony Khan could come up in his sleep, much less conscious. So the idea that Vince would go for the low-hanging fruit, I don't think so. He's had plenty of opportunities over the mm-hmm. years to do that, and I think Vince has avoided that. Again, Pat, and listen, I don't want to turn this into Monday nights at 6 p.m. Eastern time on Jersey First TV, but I don't know, man.
You are just putting that thing over. You're like Mick Foley with the cheap pop, man. You just got to get it in. I love it.
You got to. But I think you said it perfectly. I think it is going to be a challenge because we live in it. Bro, we talk about it off the air. I mean infinitely. Not just about pro wrestling, but about sports and politics and pop culture. It's going to be a challenge for Vince because we live in a time, bro, where people are easily triggered or people want a virtue signal or engage in fake outrage or be, go into moral hysteria and go into meltdown. I know the meltdown word is going to just – I know what you're going to say to that. People are going to have meltdowns. People are going to just go into full-blown tirades. People's heads are going to explode, you know, literally, figuratively. You know, and I think that's going to be a challenge because what I find to be funny or compelling, someone's going to say, well, you know, that's a little sexist and misogynist I don't know. I mean, let's be honest. Think about when people watch the Attitude Era on Peacock, you know, and they're watching, let's say, Monday Night Raw. Let's say they're watching a Monday Night Raw from 1998. And, you know, they're watching those 2 hours. Well, it's 3 hours because with the ads, it makes it 3 hours, you know, with the 57 ads on it. But
unless you're not cheap, you know.
Well, you know, again, you know, I give enough money to Vince McMahon. But anyway, that's the topic of another episode. But I just think people, I think, have a really bad misconception because if we get up on, like, the really low-hanging fruit, like blackface, Mae Young giving birth to a hand, The Nation dressing up. I'm sorry, the DX dressing up as The Nation. Katie Vick. I mean, all the awful stuff we remember. But the idea that if you say or do this, again, Pat, it's a challenge because it's a reflection of the time. Like, you say something today and someone doesn't like it, you're a blankist, a blank phobe. It happens all the time. And it's like, you know, whether it's, you know, again, listen, case in point, look at Macy Gray, who's an accomplished singer, a Grammy Award-winning singer. I mean, look at the grief she got this past week where she had to walk comments back because she's a woman. Talking about what is a woman. And it's subtle things like that, Pat, because we live in a climate that amplifies this. So I think it's going to be a challenge for Vince because you've got to be really careful. It's also a publicly traded company. It's also the idea of, like, well, what's the optic of this? Because, again, you know, it doesn't take very much these days for someone to get really triggered and say, oh, that's being misogynistic. I get accused of it all the time. And a lot of the times people are just virtue signaling for the sake of or reaching for the sake of reaching because, oh, they don't like something. So if you don't like something, hey, let's just label it because I don't like it. Pat, that's unavoidable today. And I think that's the challenge Vince is going to face if you're going to have TV-14. Where do you draw the line about a storyline being compelling? But then obviously there's going to be outrage of, oh, well, that's misogynist. No, it's not. Or it's being transphobic, which it probably won't be, but people live and die on that nonsense. I think that's the challenge, bro.
I mean, I get exactly where you're coming from, and I understand people feel that way. There are people that feel that way. I just think that Vince has dealt with a lot of adversity, with a lot of controversy in the past. And Vince has been able to get out of it, and Vince has been able to adapt. You remember the Muhammad Hassan character, you know, he immediately got rid of that.
and handled that and that, you know, was
Pat, some people will understand that, right? Pat, mind you, that was 2005, and that was right after what happened in London with, you know, Islamic extremists bombing a subway. That's 17 years ago, and look what happened.
Yeah, it's insensitive. I completely understand that. Are people going to talk online? Are people going to have meltdowns? Are people going to, you know, go off? Are people going to petition? Are people going to protest? Are they going to be hashtags? Are they going to be all this stuff? Absolutely. Nothing new to Vince McMahon whatsoever. But, my friend, we live in a country where the number one cable program is Tucker Carlson, right? He gets the most views out of anybody else. Is he free of controversy? You know what I'm saying? This is a guy that gets a lot of heat from people, that gets called, all that stuff that you just mentioned, but he's the number one cable TV program in the United States. And that, I think, is what they're looking at. They're looking at ratings. They'll handle all the heat. They'll deal with all the crap. They don't care. Everybody hates them anyway, but yet they still tune in to watch. That's not the problem. But I don't think that they're really concerned with that. I don't think that that's going to be a problem. If they do have to walk something back, then it'll probably be because it's a little too real or something like that. But, I, you know, it's kind of like a la Muhammad Hassan. But I think Vince has learned enough not to do those kind of things, and I think Vince will play off of things that are going on, you know, in our society. So, yeah, bro, I'm not worried about that. I don't think that's going to be a problem. I don't think that's going to be an issue. Again, you know, nothing's stopping Tucker Carlson, right? Nothing's stopping him. He's still going. He's still saying a lot of stuff that people either like or people hate. But people still tune in massive numbers to watch. And I think that's what Vince is looking at, and I think that's what they're looking at instead of, you know, all the grief that they're going to deal with. They get grief regardless. They get grief regardless. They got grief over, what, every friggin' episode of Dark Side of the Ring, right? You know, everything that came out, everything that's trying to surface, they get grief and they get heat no matter what, but they keep going. So I just think at the end of the day, they're concerned with just going out there and doing what's in the best interest of their talent and their product. And you have to remember that the number one word in all of this is entertainment. So no matter what, it's entertainment. It's like a movie. You know, I just I saw the movie Black Phone, by the way. A good movie with Ethan Hawke. And there's a scene in the movie, because it takes place in 1978, where a kid refers to another kid in a derogatory or, you know, slur for a gay person, F-A-G. You know what I mean? Now, not something that I would say, but that was something that was said back then. And it applied to the story that was being told. There's context to it. In Vince McMahon's case, I don't think he's going to do something like that. But I think that whatever he does do that might raise an eyebrow is going to be within the context of the story. So either way, people are going to tune in. It's just going to be better, I think, in that regard, because people are going to be curious to see. And controversy is not the worst thing that could happen to Vince McMahon. Let's be real.
Hello?
Pat, you there?
Hello?
You there?
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
you there? Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. Okay. So, no, to the point you just made about the movie and the context of that word being used in that film, I mean, let's think back to that famous promo by Jerry Lawler on Goldust, right? We all know, if you're a wrestling fan and you watch the Attitude Era, you know what promo I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, clearly no one's going to be talking like that in 2022, and I get that. And nor should anybody be talking
like that per se.
But let me tell you, man, that raised some eyebrows back in 97, 98 when Jerry did that, because it was kind of a common, not thought process, but I think the way that it was being presented. And let's be honest, man, you want to talk about a guy that's ahead of the curve or generations ahead of stuff. I mean, think about how controversial Vince was for the Goldust character in 1995, okay? We're approaching almost 30 years since that character, and look how polarizing Goldust was in 1995, right? The mannerisms, the presentation, the execution. And for anyone that knows anything about Dustin Runnels, the person, you couldn't have a more masculine guy. Like, this guy's a cowboy from Texas who rides horses, loves hunting. Like, his dad, I mean, you couldn't talk about a more masculine guy in Dustin Runnels. But he did a great job with that character, and that character was polarizing. Can that work today? I don't know. But the idea, but again, case in point, the idea that, you know, if you run somebody out there in a Goldust-esque presentation and the fans don't gravitate to it, or the fans boo it, or you start seeing, well, not signs, because they're confiscating signs now at shows, according to some sites. But, you know, Pat, again, just think about the time we're living in. If that character gets heat or gets booed, or you see fans turn on or just screaming slurs at, well, not maybe not slurs, just screaming at a character like that, you know the first thing that's going to happen online is, oh, look at wrestling fans. Look how transphobic they are. Look how bigoted they are. Look how homophobic. And it's not. Like, I didn't dislike Goldust because I'm a homophobe, which I'm not, folks, despite how much people on the left in Hudson County, New Jersey want to say otherwise. It's just a character that made me uncomfortable. I didn't like it. It doesn't make me a homophobe. But just imagine something like that today. Again, that's the challenge I think Vince would face. I'm not saying Vince would recycle this and make Goldust 2.0. I'm just saying that, like, that's the kind of world we're living in, bro. Like, a character like that would not be well-received by some. And immediately, if it's not, oh, well, that audience is just, they're homophobes, or look how bigoted they are. No, we're not. And I just think that's the challenge, Pat. I think that maybe this could face again.
I don't know. I think we got kind of close to something like that with Velveteen Dream before he decided to be a total creep in real life. But, you know, in Velveteen Dream, a lot of people liked him. A lot of people hated him, too. You know what I'm saying? But he was a heel. He was a bad guy. He was supposed to be doing that kind of stuff. And again, I think context is king here when it comes to this stuff, you know? There's been plenty of gay characters in movies that, you know, have been really horrible people, whether it's TV shows or, you know, just movies in general, like, and people didn't like them and, you know, had nothing to do with them being gay or anything like that. So a lot of that could be applied. I mean, look, are there people who are going to complain? Absolutely. But I just think at the end of the day, the people who watch wrestling understand and know, and especially people who've been watching wrestling for a long time, you know, those people that want to, like, apply a sort of realistic approach to something that is not realistic, you're fooling yourselves. And they're very minimal voices, and they're people who don't understand the business to begin with. So, again, I wouldn't be too worried about that, and I just think that Vince, by doing this, Vince is welcoming more controversy, he's basically saying. And I think based on things that we've heard about what would have happened with him backstage, particularly when he came out through the curtain after that SmackDown, when he appeared after everything, you know, kind of first was revealed, you know, Vince yelled, fuck him, really loud and gorilla, right? Well, I think this is a little bit more of Vince saying, fuck him. So he's welcoming potentially more controversy with this, but I really don't think it's going to be as bad as people think. Will there be people that will complain? Absolutely. Absolutely. Is it going to change anything for Vince? Fuck no.
Well, Pat, I think also, too, what creates even more speculation is, like, who was really at the center of this being discussed and pushed through? Is it the new interim CEO, Stephanie McMahon? Or at the end of the day, is this just Vince having or wielding his influence and saying, yeah, you know what, let's change
it's Vince.
The direction of Raw.
Yeah. It's Vince. It's always Vince. And again, like, Vince is ahead of the curve, always. You know, I mean, look at the way he's developing, you know, these athletes straight out of college, getting them to sign with WWE instead of going to UFC, going to the NFL, going to these other places. You know what I mean? Like, he's getting these people young because he wants top-level athletes that he can train to be really good wrestlers, because it's been proven through guys like Kurt Angle, Brock Lesnar, I mean, a variety of other guys. Like, you know, these legitimate athletes can work. They can work in that environment, and they can function, and they can be really, really good. More importantly, they don't have the banged-up bodies that the indie guys do, and they're not bitter, and they're probably not going to be marks for themselves because they don't even know what that is. So it's easier to train these guys and to make them into what you want them to be. But, I mean, Stephanie, I think, you know, to my understanding, You know, and again, this is all stuff reported for Billy Body. He's the most reliable guy out there. You can listen to Meltzer, you know, what's the other guy from the Munchkin Guild, you know, Brian Alvarez, you know,
Benny and Craig.
All these other ones. Benny Craig, Joey, Bobby, Timmy, Zooty, Zippy, Nutty, Squirrely, Mo, Larry, and Curly. You know, you could stack them all up together, but their news is worthless. Billy Body is the guy to listen to out there, folks. You don't have to like his takes on anything else. But as far as wrestling news goes, he's the most reliable dude out there. So give him a look. It's the Wrestling Informer on Twitter. But, I mean, Stephanie's just handling the shareholder stuff. You know what I mean? Like, she's not dealing with creative like the way Vince is. So she's just basically taking Vince's meetings and all, like, the important, like, stock shit and, you know, all that business stuff. Where Vince is, you know, where Vince is and where Vince belongs and where Vince needs to be. Vince doesn't really need to be there. You know what I'm saying? He needs to be backstage. So I think that Vince might have, you know, I think this whole thing is kind of like ticked him off, and I think he's going to push it even further, you know? Again, you know, we'll see, but I ultimately feel like this was Vince's decision 100%.
Well, remember too, again, I think Vince is being smart, obviously. He had to have had a conversation with the executives at NBC Universal. And after that conversation, you know, Vince clearly made that decision, you know, after speaking with them and, you know, maybe getting the green light. We don't know if he's had these conversations with the Fox executives. I don't know if that would fly on Fox. But again, this is a channel that has Family Guy. And if for someone that loves Family Guy like me, I mean,
yeah.
Seth MacFarlane and Family Guy has had really adult-type themes on that show. They also have other reality shows now.
Dude, they had Married with Children back in the day. You know what I'm saying? Like,
all these shows,
you know?
But in the sense, again, and that's what put Fox on the map as a young channel in the late 80s was getting the Tracy Ullman show, The Simpsons, right, which were kind of a raunchy cartoon. Same thing with Married with Children. I don't know if Fox executives, again, I can't speak for them, but you would think that, listen, they're getting a healthy 2-plus million every Friday Night Live. Again, we don't know. Maybe that'll change soon, too, but maybe the Fox executives are like, well, we don't need that right now. We're fine. You want to do that on your other channel? God bless you. You know, we don't need that right now. And I'm sure, listen, if Vince is doing this, it's because he's had the conversations with the executives. So he either got the green light or at least the blessings from NBC Universal, right, which owns USA Network, and maybe he didn't get the green light or the blessing of Fox. We'll find out. But I think you're right. I think this is definitely a way for Vince to maybe take the heat away from himself, which it seems like this story isn't going away anytime soon. It seems like the Wall Street Journal, I was just reading yesterday because I subscribed to it, and I believe that the writers were saying that they're going to have more developments next week. So whether or not there's either documents that they're going to get their hands on, whether it is other reporting. It kind of makes you wonder, man, because again, I'm not an attorney, but if you sign an NDA, I mean, why this is leaking or why details are being somehow accessible, it kind of makes you wonder like, well, wait a minute, like who's not complying with an NDA? And it kind of makes you wonder like, is there more to this story? It seems like there is. But it's not going to affect Vince one way or the other. He has a majority of the shares, and more importantly, folks, he has a majority of the voting power shares. So, you know, if you want to, and it's apples to oranges because if for everyone that knows and follows this financial stuff, like the CEO of Uber had to step down because the board of directors were able to vote him out or pressure him to step down. That's not the way WWE is structured, ladies and gentlemen. That's not, and again, I'm not trying to have an economics 101 course here, but that's not the way the company is set up from that executive board, you know, dynamic. They can't force Vince out. The board of directors does not have the voting power in terms of shares to do that. Now, it's not like what happened with Uber. Now, Uber, again, the reason the CEO stepped down is because there was a plethora of allegations about sexual harassment, you know, unsafe working environment, harassment in the workplace. I mean, it was for anyone that's interested in reading about this, read about what happened at Uber. it's fascinating. That's not going to happen here with Vince. Like, no one, the way the company is structured and set up, they cannot remove Vince. And the board director, and I know Mark's go crazy, oh, well, Vince is a bad person. Well, to your point, Pat, Vince is a wrestling promoter. They've always been morally compromised. They've never been the best of humans, per se. But it doesn't mean that all of a sudden what Vince did was criminal, right? Where we've learned that he and Linda have not been, I mean, maybe they're still legally married, but they're not living together anymore. I think for appearance's sake, when she ran for U.S. Senate in both unsuccessful attempts in 2010 and in 2012, yeah, they were still married. But Vince owns a place in Florida. Vince owns an apartment in Manhattan. He owns a condo away from their home in Stanford. Is Vince the first man of power and influence to have, you know, indiscretions and to engage in adulterous affairs? He's not the last, Pat. So I think maybe this is a good way to sort of shield away the controversy on Vince and maybe get people outraged about the product instead of Vince McMahon, the person.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And again, I think it's just Vince just being like, hey, come on, give me what you got. You know, because Vince likes this shit. Make no mistake, he likes this shit. You hear it from him on interviews. You know, he said it on Pat McAfee. He likes this kind of stuff. So I think it's only going to bring out the best in Vince. You know what I was just thinking about, actually? I wonder if it's going to be Tony Khan or if it's going to be one of the AEW talents that's going to say that Vince is so scared of AEW that he had to switch back to TV-14 or whatever. Because it is a good line for whoever would have it. But, you know, I'm fully expecting that. But, I mean,
I don't know, Pat. Dude. Jericho this week kind of came out defending Vince. So Jericho's one of the bigger voices at AEW, and he kind of poo-pooed the whole outrage about Vince, you know?
Well, you know why. You know why, dude. He's winding down whatever he's had over there. He's going to end up going back to Vince. They're going to induct him into the Hall of Fame. They're going to make a ton of money off for merch, maybe one last match, and then that's it. That's it. And then maybe he might even get a job working for Vince. We don't know. But it might be crazy. It might be premature on my part, you know, and I have said some pretty crazy things in my life. Hard to believe, folks. I know. But I think AEW is not going to make it. But, like, I think AEW is probably out of business in the next 3 years. I really think so, dude, if they continue to do what they're doing. And especially, and you got to look at this, right? Like, Vince is beating them in the ratings handily, right? Except for the 10 minutes, the famous 10 minutes. Vince is beating them in the ratings pretty handily. And I think a good chunk of people will agree that this is not the best stuff that we have seen in the history of the company, right? However, if Vince can do this with them being PG, imagine what he's going to do to them when it's TV-14. And imagine if they start doing something that's hot. You know, it's going to leave Tony Khan in the dust. And they're going to continue to keep, you know, with that whole little, you know, Mark niche audience. But, dude, I mean, it's just going to end up, I mean, look, maybe he could stick around. Maybe it could end up becoming like the way Impact is now. And that's no offense to Impact, none whatsoever. But Impact have always had structure there. And they've always had wrestling people doing these things. And that's the difference between AEW. So I think if Tony Khan eventually gets to the point where it's just too much for him and the town's just like, yo, this is a fucking waste. I'm not being used correctly. Like, I'm not being used safely, you know, in the case of some talents there. You know, fuck it. I'll go back to Vince one last run. I'll swallow my pride. I did what I did here, made some money. Fuck it. I'll go back. They'll put me in the Hall of Fame or, you know, Moxley's case. They'll do a Shield reunion. They'll do something. You know what I'm saying? And that's the thing. You know what I mean? So I don't know, man. I'm just saying that I don't think it bodes well for AEW that Vince is switching to TV-14. And if they continue to, like, kind of do what they're doing and bleed money and not really utilize the talent that they have to the best of their booking ability and generate newer viewers and just continue to grow as a company, I don't think they're going to stick around for another 3 years. I really don't.
I just don't see it happening.
And mind you, Pat, and let's just add this caveat, too, to the dynamic you just explained. I mean, TNT is not going to let Tony Khan get any edgier. He's just not. Like, TNT, you can tell.
But it's not even edgy. It's just blood. That's it. It's blood. It's blood. Mm-hmm. Like, what's really edgy that they're doing over there? Well, besides what? Like, MJF doing his promos? I mean, Christian, okay, yeah, you know, like, Christian's kind of taking the MJF role for now, right? But, like, I mean, bro, it's just blood. It's blood and violence. That's it. That's the edge. That's the edge, if you really think about it.
No, I'm saying, but that's the extent I believe. Again, if I had to take an educated guess here, I think that's the extent to what TNT will give Tony Khan as much rope as possible in the sense of edgier storylines, in the sense of pushing certain characters. Like, let's be honest. All of a sudden, Nyla Rose is getting a bit of a resurgence right now on television. She's being featured again. She's in a tag team feud. I mean, again, we all know at the onset of AEW, kind of what marks we're talking about as it pertains to Nyla Rose. When it comes to the way the women are being used or featured, or edgier storylines, again, I think TNT, I think this is the roof. I think this is the ceiling. I don't think TNT is going to let Tony Khan get edgier with either what they say on television, with either the way that people are presented or storylines. I think we learned that right from the end of WCW. You know, what caused, if you listen to Bischoff's podcast and you read his book and you listen to testimonials, what was Bischoff's biggest complaint about TNT or Turner Network Television? You know, once AOL merged with Time Warner and they absorbed it, you know, Turner Television took on a very different perspective when it came to WCW. They couldn't do what Vince was doing during the Attitude Era. And even Bishop was like, this sucks. Like, this puts me in a huge disadvantage because TBS and TNT is not going to let me do what Vince does with the USA Network or
UPN. But that's
UPN
not the problem. But that's not the problem in the case of AEW. It's not a problem of them being allowed to do more edgy stuff. Like, they literally have a ton of violence, like, on their programs. So, like, you know that they can do edgier things in terms of, like, storylines and content and stuff like that, but that's what they're missing. Like, the storylines and the stuff really isn't great. It really isn't great. It isn't consistent. There's not consistent main eventers. It's kind of like this free-flowing thing, and everybody thinks it's great because, like, that's what they want to see. But, again, it's a niche audience that want to see that stuff. It's a niche audience, you know? And the problems aren't the edgy content. It's the structure, the wrestling structure that's, like, lacking there, the oversight, you know, not letting guys go out there and kill themselves and get hurt, not putting top-level talent in bullshit main events where they can get hurt, you know, like, being smart about what you're doing, expanding your audience, growing your audience, you know, like, they feel that their snail's pace progress is, like, this grand achievement, but it's really not. They could be doing so much more with the talent that they have. And that's the issue. And I think that Tony Khan is too stubborn. And I think that, you know, when he hears all those chants inside the buildings that they're working in, that let's be honest, they're getting smaller and smaller, you know, he feels like that's what he's doing it for. And hey, you know what? If that's what he wants to do, then good luck to him. You know what I'm saying? But I just don't think that he's going to continue to, like, operate at a big level if he continues to put his programs together like that. Because eventually, if WWE starts putting out better stuff, they're going to swing a lot of people right back. And then Tony Khan is going to begin to suffer. And that's the problem. So,
absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Let's see where this goes for them. But they really, I mean, like, All Out, right? I think they moved to a small building that entire week, right? They're not doing the United Center for that?
Well, last year it wasn't the United Center either. I think the Dynamite
right.
and the Rampage leading up to All Out was at the United Center, but I think it's the same building as last year, the Now Arena. I think last year it wasn't the Allstate Arena, but I think for some reason, I think they may have, like, a WWE exclusive agreement. I think that's what I read.
So I think the Now Arena,
which is still not a small, I mean, it's not like an Impact building, right? We're having, like, 5,000, 6,000 people. I think it might crack somewhere between 11 to 13, which is, I think it was what, that's the ceiling for AEW. I think, you know, and you would believe, or like to believe, that AEW, again, All Out is probably their marquee show next to Double or Nothing in May. You would think that they would want to do United Center again, but they just did that for Forbidden Door. I don't know if fans, knowing that Punk probably is not going to be on the card, from what reports are telling you and us, that Bryan Danielson may also not be on the card. Seems like their recovery time is going to be longer than expected. It might be a challenge for Tony Khan, and he probably saw that. He's like, you know what, can I sell out the United Center again? No, not right now. Not without Omega. And I'm not saying Omega's make or break, but mm-hmm. the less big names you have, the more difficult it's going to be. So I think Tony Khan kind of took the more economically savvy route and put it in the Now Arena, which I think is that makes sense for them.
Yeah, but he wouldn't be in that position if he didn't book like some 8-year-old eating his boogers fucking playing video games. You know what I'm saying? Like he's going like a moron. He's booking like a jabron, and it's like, dude, you got these top-level talents. Why are you putting them in these matchups where they could get hurt with green dudes or with weapons or with shit that they shouldn't be doing? They're stars. Let them be stars. Feature them prominently. Put them at the top of the card, and bam, let them work. Let them do their moves, and that's that, because that's what they do. But putting them in a match where they're a cage and the anarchy in the UK and all this other stuff and the fucking Ramones and all that other shit, like, bro, what is that doing for anybody? What is that doing for anybody? You know what I'm saying? CM Punk, too. Like, CM Punk, you kind of saw was going to get hurt because he kept trying to do stuff that you were like, bro, what are you doing? Like, you couldn't even do that when you were in your 20s. Why do you think you could do that in your 40s? Super Frankensteiners and stuff. Like, you know, like, bro, like, that's going to come back and bite you in the ass. And then, again, like, having that long layoff, like, not being used to being in the ring training consistently or being in the ring working consistently, like, on a schedule. You know, your body gets used to it, and eventually it's just, bam, muscle memory, second nature, and, like, it really doesn't hurt as much. You know what I mean? But, like, when you're doing it, like, that once in a while, or you're doing it, like, maybe a couple times a week, you know, and, like, or you're having this long layoff, and then you're trying to do stuff that you shouldn't be doing anymore because athletically you can't do it, of course you're going to get hurt, and you're going to put yourself in that position, you know? But I don't know. Look. Bottom line, Tony Khan shouldn't even be in this position. He should not be working smaller arenas. He should have featured those guys in better positions on the card. He should have put them, you know, in the main events because, you know, that way you could get fans to watch all the stuff. He should limit all the flippy crap and just be smart. Be smart. And I think he wouldn't be in this position that he's in now. So let's see. But I'm telling you right now, man, I'm calling it right here. I'm working the marks with Fernando and Patrick. Available on Blog Talk Radio. I got one show to plug, so you know I got to plug the show like while I'm on the show. You know, I'm not. I don't have two shows to plug, but but I think that WWE switching to TV-14 and mainly Monday Night Raw, which is the show that has been put through the gutter by the marks the most. I really think that this could really be a problem for Tony Khan and for AEW. So very interesting times ahead, I'd say.
I agree with you for sure. Pat, before we call it a week here, one of our favorite segments on the show, obviously, on this day in wrestling history. And it's only a day removed from it, per se, but really on this week in wrestling history, something that was really historic. Back, actually, 20 years ago, exactly, on this day in wrestling history, Eric Bischoff shocked the wrestling world when he appeared on Monday Night Raw. As we were just seeing the very first brand split, which we've seen many incarnations of it over the years. But in 2002, Vince McMahon decided to have the first official brand split between Raw and SmackDown subsequently. And I remember it like yesterday. I remember watching Raw in the summer of 2002. And when you saw Eric Bischoff walking backstage and when you saw Vince McMahon announce Eric Bischoff as the first general manager of Raw, and they hugged on the stage, knowing what we know at the, again, and this is 20 years ago. So again, the internet was still in its infancy per se. There weren't as many wrestling sites as there are now. Remember, YouTube did not exist yet. It was still, it was 3 years away from YouTube even starting. You know, MySpace that still not existed in social media, no Facebook, no nothing. Social media was, we didn't even know what that term was. 20 years ago, what we knew about Eric Bischoff, right, in interviews and whatever, to see him on stage hugging Vince McMahon, I mean, that was a surreal moment for wrestling fans who lived through the Monday Night Wars. And even today, it feels like yesterday, though, man, 20 years ago, man, you know, in This Week in Pro Wrestling, Eric Bischoff, the first GM of Monday Night Raw, brother.
Yeah, man, that was a pretty big moment. I remember watching that and being like, man, hell's frozen over. But little did I know what lay ahead for that decade, particularly 2010. But I mean, yeah, that was a pretty cool moment, man. And it was very, very strange. And man, Vince really hammed it up, like hugging the crap out of Eric, you know. And here was a guy that like legitimately tried to put him out of business, and you know, he's up there hugging him. So yeah, special moment in wrestling during a pretty special time in the business.
Without a doubt. And it kind of makes you, and again, it's a reminder that Vince, the businessman, and Vince, the human being, are two arguably the most fascinating personalities to study, I think, in pop culture history, in pro wrestling history, and let's be honest, in financial history, because,
yeah,
you know, you can dislike someone as much as Vince McMahon has, and there has been a long laundry list of people, from Hulk Hogan, who arguably tried to put him in jail by testifying on behalf of the federal government during the steroid trial in 1992, to the Ultimate Warrior no-showing shows, to issues with Randy Savage, to issues with other people during the years, to Bret Hart, right, that we've all learned, and bringing Bret back in 2010. I mean, if there was ever an example of Vince saying, hey, I can put my personal feelings aside, I'll do business, I'll do something that'll generate ratings. And let's be honest, if you listen to the story that's been told a million times, whether it's in his book or on podcasts, I mean, when Bischoff took the limo ride from Kennedy Airport to Vince's house in Sanford, and he sat in Vince's living room, that, again, hearing that story, Pat, I mean, it kind of makes, it just reminds you that Vince the businessman will put personal feelings aside. If it can help him make money, you know, hey, that's what's best for business. I'll tell you right now, why an economics professor in any college in this country has not designed a syllabus or a course to articulate the business practices of this man as a college course for credit is beyond me, because that right there probably should be the most insightful, I think, curriculum to explain, hey, this is how you do business. This is how you get successful, by being able to engage in these practices. Not everybody can do that. Not everybody can engage in a business practice like that, because, listen, we've talked about it off the air. I dislike a lot of people, vice versa. Have some people decided to do some business with me? Yes, but it's taken a lot of conversations, and it's taken a lot of pride being swallowed. Not everybody does that well, but I would argue the one that takes the gold medal is Vince McMahon, brother.
Oh, yeah, dude. I mean, whether it's like Hogan, Warrior, you know, Brett, you know, Goldberg even at times, Brock Lesnar at times, you know, Steve,
Jerry Lawler. Remember? Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, a lot of different people throughout the years, you know, Roddy Piper, you know, Vince is always able to take that stuff and put it aside. And I think Vince ultimately looks at, you know, what's in the best interest of the fans. Like, people could say it, you know, oh, no, he doesn't. Like, dude, he still has you watching. He still has you talking about him. He still has you caring. So shut the fuck up. You know what I'm saying? Because, like, for as much as you hate it, you can't stop watching it. Vince McMahon, if Vince McMahon was cracked, we would all be Tyrone Biggums. You know what I'm saying? We'd all be walking around with Tyrone Biggums.
No, we'd be Hunter Biden, essentially.
Oh, nice one. Nice one. Hunter knows how to party, though. I would love to see Hunter Biden meet Hunter Hearst Helmsley. Like, I feel like that would be, like, a very interesting combination there.
No, I want to see Hunter Biden party with Vince McMahon in Vegas at the Mirage Hotel with, you know, or at the Sapphire Strip Club. That's what I want to see. That's pay-per-view for me.
I want that to escalate into a tag team match, and I want Don and Don Jr. to take on Vince and Hunter Biden. And I could just see the point, you know, Vince, you turned your back on me. I thought we were really great friends. You're going with this guy smoking crack, all right? You're going to be hanging out with him. Let's not even talk about the shady business. You know, like, it would just be, oof, compelling television from the former WWE Hall of Famer Donald Trump. I'm sorry, current WWE Hall of Famer Donald Trump.
Correct. Yes, that's not going anywhere either, folks. Yes, that's right. Pat, great show this week. Before we go off the air, last minute plugs here. What are you looking forward to?
Got some shows lined up pretty soon. August 6th, we're going to be playing back at Crave 43. Crave 43 just featured in HUD Post. You might want to give that a look. We got a nice little scene popping off there. Check out Miracle Mile Venues, Terry Vericelli, at Terry Vericelli, at Miracle Mile Venues. They're on Instagram. If you're a band, an artist, you want to have an event there, you want to do anything, that's the place to hit up. They also have a bunch of other places, such as Coromoto, as well as Don Ramon. So hit those guys up if you're looking to do anything kind of local in the Union City area. And, just looking forward to seeing Dead & Company tonight. Should be a really, really fun show, a bit of a cultural experience. I might get lost. I might become a hippie. This might be my last episode of Working the Marks, but, I'm going to try not to. Just have a good time out there, everybody. And, hey, don't be an asshole if you see an old lady who needs a hand, help her out.
Wow, that is, I'll tell you, words of wisdom from the great PBR. Folks, on my end, certainly for those of you that are fans of Real Talk with Fernando Uribe on Monday nights via Jersey First TV at 6 p.m. Eastern Time this Monday, very interesting interview. The academic in me is definitely going to mark out here as I will welcome Hudson County Community College President Dr. Chris Reber to the show. We're going to talk about how HCCC continues to become sort of the perennial community college and very affordable one at that in the New York tri-state area. It continues to expand. It has become a institution of learning that I've enjoyed teaching at, that has a lot of great faculty, a lot of great programs and opportunities for kids and young adults too, that are looking to advance themselves and go back to school and learn a trade, learn a skill. So for those of you that love nice academic conversations and maybe other interesting stuff too, tune in this Monday night at 6 p.m. Eastern time on Jersey First TV via YouTube and on Facebook Live. So,
what's his last name? You said Reefer. His name's Chris Reefer.
No, it's Chris Reber. R E B E R.
R E V E R. Reever. Reever. Oh, okay.
No,
does
Reever.
Like a Reever.
No, Reever. Reever.
Okay.
B as in a boy.
Reber. Oh, Reber. Reber. Okay. Okay. Well,
there
whether
you go.
It's Reber or Reefer, you can count on that interview being plenty lit. So,
Oh, my God. Unbelievable. I love it. Folks, if you love the show, if you don't love the show, whatever your feelings are, write to the inbox, workingthemarks@gmail.com. We welcome your feedback. We love to, get comments about what you like about it. We see it on social media. Shout out to our great guy who works with us on Working the Marks, David.
At D. Rotten.
At D. Ron, excuse
at
me.
D.
I know,
Rock.
I'm sorry. The government name, I know. I'm sorry about that. So check him out on his Instagram, folks. At D. Rotten. That's D-E-E Rotten. Certainly make sure you follow us both on Instagram, at Patty Rican. That's PaddyRican, as well as my own Instagram, at NoFilterUribe. Check out the show, folks, also on Instagram, @working_the_marks. Also on Twitter, @working_marks, as well as our own Twitter for PBR. It's @PatrickSKVM. And my own Instagram, Twitter, @NoFilterUribe. Folks, always remember, for the best commentary about what's going on in today's pro wrestling / sports entertainment scene, nobody does it better than we do every single week here on Blog Talk Radio. He is the premier wrestling analyst, the great PBR. I am New Jersey's premier journalist, the professor, Fernando Uribe. And you know what we're doing every single week here? We are indeed working the marks. We'll see you next week here, folks, on Blog Talk Radio. Stay safe, stay hydrated and cool during the summer months. And we'll see you next week here, as always, on blogtalkradio.com/workinthemarks. Order me away.